You're listening to Sync Beast. I'm Graham, your host, and after I hit six figures as a sync producer, I made it my mission to turn sync into a game that I could play and win year after year. With a simple creative strategy, intense production techniques, and pro-level mindsets that got me there faster than I could have ever imagined. I want to sell the farm so that you can create a profitable sync catalog, produce for sync with confidence, and actually improve your lifestyle as a sync producer. I'm here to let you know that sync is just a game, and I'm going to show you how to play it. Coming up. What's up, y'all? Here's something that a lot of producers tend to misunderstand about sync. The quality of your pitches determines the quality of your syncs. Now, the pitches I'm talking about are not, "Hey, library, please represent my music." That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about pitches that come after the track is in the library and it's getting pitched to big brands regularly. Those are the pitches that I want to talk about today, where your track is live, and then you have creatives and clients coming to the website, searching for them. They're asking your library for tracks of a very specific style, and yours happens to be it. And we want that experience to happen with our catalog as often as possible. Of course, not every track is going to be a winner, but we want to get as close to that as often as possible. So we want to attract those opportunities to get our tracks pitched to those big brands. We want our music to attract opportunities that get us paid. And this is what distracts a lot of people. This is what causes producers, especially green ones, people who are just getting into sync, it causes them to put blinders up and they get distracted and they're unable to think about anything other than, "I want big syncs. Like, I want syncs." And it holds them back and they don't know it. They are unaware. And everybody has to go through this. I'm not just picking on people. Like, I went through it. Everybody has to go through it. Because the promise of sync is so strong that it only makes sense to dream big about it. But like with any dream or with any goal, you need to take the right steps to make it happen. And focusing on the right steps means you'll get there in the most A to B direct way possible. And faster, too. It might not be easier, but at the very least, you're progressing 1% every single day. That's the idea. So producers who are new to sync, they get distracted while the vets focus on doing the right things. So what are those things? Like, if I could only do X and Y, then I could do Z. We're not focusing on getting syncs. We're focusing on getting pitches. As far as my data shows me, that is the true marker of the value of my music. It tells me who finds it even remotely valuable. So why wouldn't I want it to be true for you? So every quarter, I can get a statement from my library that essentially outlines or organizes all of the pitches that my tracks got for that quarter. And it tells me which tracks get pitched and where. It's very important. Where do they get pitched? Who is interested in it? Did it win? Did it lose? I don't know if your library does that, but mine does. And I've used it to my advantage for years. I look at it and say, number one, what can I expect my income to be, right? I do a little calculation and get a ballpark number for that quarter. Number two, I get to see what tracks I need to double down on. You've probably heard me say this multiple times before. The idea that if something works, you just do it again. That's really the secret sauce. Even if you don't know what worked about those tracks, just make them again. And eventually, it'll start to make sense. You'll start to see a pattern. You'll start to see a formula. It might take some time if you're doing it on your own without any help. But at the very least, you're doing the thing that gets you closer to your goal by repeating the things that work. So if big syncs are what we want, and we need to focus on getting better pitches, What is going to lead us to that? We're just reverse engineering this thing. What's going to lead you to finishing a track, getting it live and uploaded in your library, and within days, it starts getting pitched to big brands? You know, I'm talking NBA, Microsoft, and Lexus. We're talking big, big brands. And by parsing through all of my data for years, I've learned that there are certain tracks in my catalog that just have the sauce. They just work for sync. And I love that. When I didn't understand it, I still loved it because I saw the fruits of my labor. But over time, I started to ask, what is it that they do? Like, what do those tracks do? And I asked it enough times over and over again that it just started to click for me. I just wanted more of that thing. I didn't necessarily care about the syncs. I didn't have to. I wanted more of the big brand pitches. And this is the turning point for me when I started making all of my creative decisions and my production choices, sound selection, and, you know, musical storytelling, like all of these things that I do and advise on today, that's when I started finding patterns in each of those categories. You know what I mean? I listened to my high performing tracks and I'd say, okay, I did this and this and that, and these tracks got pitched to, let's say, Pepsi. Like, wouldn't it be nice if I could just make a carbon copy of this song that got pitched to Pepsi, but then just, you know, make it sound different? It's a very simple concept. The thing that got me the Pepsi pitch is what I should be focusing on. How can I make this track that got like a 5-figure sync? How can I make that track again? How can I make a track that performs and behaves in a similar way? And this line of thinking came from necessity in a way, because I needed more money. I needed to win. I'd put all my eggs in this basket of being a professional producer, composer. That's all I had. I had no choice. I gave myself no way out, essentially. And that plowed me forward into just doing the 1% better move, you know, getting 1% closer to my goal by repeating the stuff that works. And I realized that every track that got big syncs got the most care, they got the most nurturing, they got the most inspiration right out the gate, right up front. We're not talking complex here. These are not complex ideas. We got to be very simple. These tracks that got great pitches, I just thought about them the longest. I sat with them. They were the tracks I was writing when I wasn't actually writing. You know, before bed, right when I woke up, I was making voice memos in the shower, you know, in the car. Like, I'm taking on this new idea, this new personality, this new character when I write tracks. And that process takes time. It takes time to become the artist that would make a very specific track. And I tell people all the time, this is very much like method acting. It's exactly what we do. You have to be able to see the function and the behavior of your music and how it's going to be used. You have to be able to see that and then embody it. And the story that I love to tell about this concept is with Sia. Sia has an album called This Is Acting. And what most people don't know is that a lot of those songs were written for other artists that were either rejected or she kept for herself or whatever. And she called it This Is Acting because the creative process was, in fact, like acting. Cheap Thrills, that song, that was written for Rihanna. Sia heard Rihanna on the track in her head, so she had to act like Rihanna. She had to make a song like Rihanna would. What would Rihanna do? That's what Sia asked. And that's what I did to a certain extent with my high performing tracks, is just asked myself, how would a track be used in this Jeep commercial? Like, I saw how Jeep used an ex-ambassador's track in a campaign back in the day. So I had to ask myself, how would ex-ambassadors go about writing this track? How can I make something like them in the way that Jeep would find valuable? Because that's where the money is. How can I make something that Jeep would want to use in a very Jeep way? Whatever that is. And there's a lot of people out there who say to not do it that way. Just write a real song first. That's their recommendation. Just write a real song. And it's like, yeah, write a real song. But then ask yourself how you can sneak in the little things that brands want in high-performing tracks. Okay, so that moved me from the inspiration phase and into the execution phase. It went from thinking to executing. And I saw that I had a habit of moving from this thinking to doing, this executing. And I did that by sketching out my ideas. Okay. You know, 3, 5, 10 little ideas. I would sketch and sketch and sketch. And that has always been my process for getting the heebie-jeebies out, because I'm fairly low confidence when I'm going into a new project. I don't know if I'll be able to execute until I hear a good idea come out of me. It's almost like I don't believe it. And that's just a natural thing. I don't even think that's a limiting factor. It's just a natural tendency of mine. You might relate to that. So I become more confident when I give myself more chances to come up with ideas. I hit more baseballs when I get more at-bats, right? That's the idea. So I have to create that opportunity for myself. So just like how I sing a million voice memos into my phone to get this one idea solidified and crystallized, I'm also taking it to the lab and making as many ideas out of it as possible in my DAW. That's been my MO. It takes me at least 2 tries, 2 sketches to nail a really, really strong song idea. And don't get me wrong, it could take me 3 to 5 sketches to get one idea. But usually it takes me 2 sketches to get a healthy start on a track. And these sketches are very low pressure. I actually have all this outlined in my production plan. You can DM me if you want it. Just DM me the word plan, P-L-A-N, and I'll get it over to you. But I would sketch these ideas until I landed on something that convinced me that it was worth pursuing. And that's what I saw myself doing with these high-performing tracks. I noticed that the tracks that got pitches with awesome brands were technically like a V2 or a V3. Like, I fucked up the first sketch, got closer on the second sketch. You know what I mean? Like, I know I'm talking very general here, but it's like the first sketch doesn't sound good. The second sketch is closer. Maybe it embodies the attitude or personality that I want to capture in the final track, right? And there also might be a cool drum part or like a cool melody that I could repurpose from that second sketch for the third one, you know, the brand new, better idea with like a slightly different shift in mood or something like that. But after all of that, that entire process, I would eventually land on something valuable, a stronger idea that I could be confident I can bring to life. And that's the feeling I want every single time. I don't care how insecure I am at the start. I know I'm going to get there if I just give myself more chances. And when I finally land on something good, something worth bringing to life, then I start to really flesh out that idea. And I call it building out the sketch. And if you heard me talk about the Legos idea before, this is when the Legos kick in. Is when you start building bricks up over time, and then you take them away to bring the dynamics back down. And then you build them back up, and you break them back down. Like, this has nothing to do with producing a genre authentically, right? This has nothing to do with writing a good song. I'm only talking about how I build a track in a way that's useful to brands, and brands find dynamic stories to be the most useful. They love dynamic stories. I don't have time to get into those stories today, but I'll just say that if you build a track up and down and up and down over time in a full-length track, you're going to be 10 times closer to having a useful track that gets better pitches than any other track. And with the build out comes collaboration, you know, calling some people in and writing some parts for me, re-recording parts or whatever. And the idea is that you can loop this build phase into the next phase that I call the collab phase, where the song is written and now you can punch it up with better players, better writers. I saw that there was always a point where I was writing a song, I took it as far as I could by myself, and then I brought on other people so I could increase its value. It gets written better. It sounds better. I actually just did it with a recent project. I got everything done, all the music, at least like the demo of it, most of the top line, but I couldn't get the last lyric of the hook, like verse, pre, chorus, and then that last line, the payoff line. So I had to call my friend and I was like, hey, I got this sync track, I'm building it out right now. It's still kind of in rough shape, but I need a really punchy line at the end of the hook. Like, I really need this thing to pay off. Can you help me? And he said, yes. So I sent it to him, and not 15 minutes later, he came up with something. He shot me a voice memo or whatever, and I was like, that's it. I put it in, finished my build out. It worked out great. We agreed to a little split for the work that he did, and then I ended up getting him to re-record my vocals for the final version, the ones that I wrote. And I basically do that every single time because that's what I did with my high-performing tracks in the past. The tracks that got those big brand pitches. It's all about replicating the process. That's what the tracks that got really, really big pitches did. It was all the care I put into the inspiration and the thinking about it and the strategizing. It was the care and the nurturing that ultimately created those pitch opportunities. Because without those pitches, again, I cannot get big syncs. I just can't get them. If I'm not targeting big brand pitches, and again, we're talking the music is already in the library, right? And creatives, the supervisors, or, you know, producers or whoever on the facilitation front, they're getting access to the music for pitches in their projects. That's what I mean. We need to focus on their pitches, not our pitches to a library. It's what the library is pitching to the clients. And the repetition there is an advantage. Because if you do something that works, then you can try and make it again. Just do the carbon copy and change something slightly about it. You know, change the mood. Maybe you did something at 128 BPM and it had like one major chord, but everything else is minor. And if that gets a pitch to Puma, well, you should have a mind to write a similar thing. You should automatically be thinking about it like that. Give it the same backbone, give it the same DNA, but maybe now it has two major chords instead of one. You see what I'm saying? Little tweaks. Like, you could just change things slightly. You change the key, you change the melody, you change the drum tones. Like, I'm not saying rip yourself off. I'm saying use the DNA and the backbone that works. Change the drum tones, change the rhythmic density, and all of a sudden, you have a different song, but it's modeled after the one that got a Puma pitch. And for me, that concept actually came from growing up listening to a lot of metal, like Metallica. If you've ever listened to Metallica, all of their songs on each album are composed in almost the same way. Let's take their album And Justice for All. I know that each song is going to have a sizable intro, like almost like an overture. And then, you know, it's going to go into verse, pre-chorus. And then it's going to have some sort of little solo or like melodic thing, some melodic figure. And then it's going to break down into something different, whether it's going into like a speed metal part or maybe going to more of like a down section, something we haven't heard yet for the bridge. And then they're going to build it back up into a ripping solo, you know, something that contrasts the low, thoughtful point in the song. It usually goes 0 to 60 after the bridge. That's kind of a Metallica thing. And then we're going to get back to that melody, that melodic figure, some guitar mini thing that wraps up the solo. And then it's going to get us back into the verse, back into the pre, back into the chorus. And then at the very end, they're going to do a play on what they've already given us. They're going to change things ever so slightly in the end. The rhythm might change, the meter, the riff might change a little bit just to be more exciting. Like, I grew up with this. This is ingrained in me. So that's why it just makes sense. I studied it and I learned those guitar parts when I was a kid. And I played them so much that it just makes sense to me. That model makes sense. So I figured, why couldn't that work for me? Like, that's the system I'm used to. It's less effort. It makes more sense in my brain to look at it like figures or like little puzzle pieces. Why can't I do that with what I do? And that's exactly why I build my tracks with a system. That's exactly how I go about producing these tracks. It's my process. How can I systemize this thing as much as possible? How can I make sure that these tracks are positioned? And that has everything to do with the inspiration, at least for me. The time that it takes to get references and get my descriptors and really brief myself and understand what it is I'm writing. I move that into the sketches where I'm actually executing and trying these new ideas out and trying to make them real. And then I move into the build phase, which is, you know, after I've selected the sketches that are going to work, maybe it's one, maybe it's three, basically the promising ones with the best ideas. I ask, how am I going to build those out? And I build them in the same way every single time. I just take the guesswork away. Up, down, up, down, up, down. Now, there's more specifics there than that. Again, I don't have time to get into that. But in the same line of thought there, I'm constantly handing off tracks to professional specialists, session players, co-writers, vocalists. All of it is intended to increase the value of my tracks. That's what I want. Because when I do, I increase the quality of my pitches. And when I increase the quality of my pitches, I increase the quality of my syncs. You see, it's a domino effect. It all comes down to who I'm showing my work to, right? How visible are my tracks? That's how I think about them. Again, I break all of this down in my production plan, which I'd be happy to give you. And before I wrap this thing up, I want to share another little analogy here. Get ready to visualize. Pretend you own a hot dog stand and you sell these hot dogs, okay? What is the easiest, fastest way to sell the most hot dogs? You have to answer it. What is the easiest and fastest way to sell the most hot dogs? Well, logically, you have to go where the hot dogs are wanted the most, right? It makes sense. Where are the people hungriest for hot dogs? You have to be there. You have to get there. You have to give it to those people in the way that they want it, which is likely fast and simple. You know, they're saying, I'm hungry. Just hand me the thing with a bun and I'll just do the ketchup and mustard. Or someone else might say, I want the ketchup and mustard already on it. Go to the people who are hungry. Figure out what they want, which is hopefully hot dogs. Figure out how they want it with condiments and then give it to them. I love that analogy because it makes it so simple and it totally applies to producing valuable tracks. You need to bring wanted material to the table. You need to bring assets that people actually want to throw money at. You can't just focus on syncs. You can't just focus on the output. As a sync producer, you need to focus on the inputs, doing the things that get you closer and closer to those big brand pitches, those quality brand pitches. So that when you finally get your statement at the end of the quarter and you see these big brands popping up and you say, oh, NFL liked this song. That's enough data for you to carbon copy that track. Even if you don't know what's going on, technically, like under the hood, right? You do your best to replicate it in a new way. That's it. That's the fastest, easiest way to get bigger brand pitches is when you finally get one or five or 10, you just do it again. Make that happen again. If you do something that works, do it again. That's the best advice I can give you. If I had 10 seconds to give you life-changing advice, I'd tell you to do what's working for you right now and do it again, because it's only going to get better over time. And that's it, y'all. Thank you so, so much for tuning into this episode. We're really trying to grow this podcast to reach more serious producers like yourself. So if you like this content and you want more, I'm posting a lot over on my Instagram. Right now, I'm really focusing on stories, which is where I get to share a lot of my deeper material like you're used to hearing on this podcast. Anyway, it's another way for you to get the real stuff that no one else is talking about in the new age of sync. You can find me at syncbeast.co on Instagram, and I'll see you over there. And if you like this episode, then be sure to catch the next one, because I'm talking a ton more about how to think at the highest level of sync. It's the game I play every single day, and I want to see you win. So stay hungry, and I will talk to you soon.